Folks, I've had a lot of fun this weekend coming here, getting to know you. I have attended, I think, one Boost event before for one evening in Indiana like many, many years ago. So I knew a little bit about Boost. But just being here, getting to know the culture and some of the folks that attend us on a regular basis, one of the things that I have the privilege and opportunity of doing is speaking to a lot of business folks, and and mostly in the Christian business world. So I typically stay in that world. I think I've got like one secular corporation up in Canada. They're all pagans up there. So there's only really one corp that I work for that I think is secular. If I go back in my memory. In any case, one of my goals is to just bless the business community and say, you know what, for years and years, we have made you feel like second-class citizens, those of us in church leadership. And I want to apologize profusely for that sentiment that has been communicated to you over the years. And of course, we all know that when we need people to come and support our mission, our vision, then we come to you guys, right? But I want to just say, you guys have the biggest halos, like everyone else that's a believer. And we have got to get away from this sacred secular dichotomy. I really believe that business is the place to disciple people. What a great opportunity for us to disciple the people that work for us. What a great place for us to build incredible products to make the world a better place, support services that are out there. And so my hat has always been off to the business community, and just excited that I had the privilege of coming and being a part of that. Just want to remind you that I will be here for a few minutes after the event if you want to pick up. I think there's like one or two books left of Blanchard, and then I've got some devotionals left if you want to pick those up. And then I've also got a coaching program that I'm throwing $2,000 off if you buy it today for your company. If you buy it as an individual, I throw $100 off today, and that's all on my serving leadership material. And I hope a number of you, a large number of you, took advantage of the coaching program that Boost is. I didn't know anything about that. That is exciting. I'm guessing a pretty new development here that they are making available to us. And folks, we need mentors. We need cohorts. We need support to help us do this with a kingdom mindset. And so I just want to bless you as you engage in that, enroll in that. I'm guessing, is there still time left, John, to sign up? There's still time to sign up on that, John says. So if you haven't, make sure you do that before you leave. Well, I've got another 45 minutes with you yet before I get you out of here. I have no idea how long this is going to take me. Might get you out of here early. Wouldn't that be great? All right, woohoo. We're going to talk about going where you want to go, and I have an airplane story to get us started with, so you're just not going to get away from it. And I happen to be catching a flight home tonight, so this airplane thing is... And every time Scott tells that story, I cry. I have sat under this story numerous times, and it's so powerful. So thank you, Scott, for bringing us into your story and just magnifying God through your story today. Well, whenever you board an airplane, you always have a destination in mind. At least I certainly will when I board my flight out of Canton, Akron today. I want to go home, right? I want to go home, and so did Captain Sully on January 15, 2009. How many of you remember this story? You maybe watched the video of the plane landing on the Hudson. Well, when he was piloting U.S. Airways Flight 1549 from LaGuardia, New York to Charlotte, North Carolina, he had no intention whatsoever of ending up in a river. Now, imagine if you joined me on my flight back to Chicago today, and after we had climbed to about 30,000 feet, the pilot came on with an announcement. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to United 4497, bound for O'Hare. We're so glad you joined us today. We've decided to rearrange our flight plan. Instead of heading west to Chicago, we've decided to fly around for a while until our fuel runs out, going everywhere, anywhere, and possibly nowhere. Please sit back and enjoy the view out through your window. Click, click. I guarantee you your head would come out of that Sudoku puzzle that you're so fascinated with on your flight. Benjamin Franklin once said, many people die at 25 and aren't buried until they are 75. In other words, they've got dreams for their lives when they're young. They've got visions. They've got plans, places to go, things to accomplish. But then the harsh realities of life settle in upon them and they give up. And they end up settling for mediocrity and are simply waiting around for someone to put them in the ground. William Wallace in Braveheart said, "Every man dies, but not every man really lives." Irenaeus, the early church father, I pointed out this out the other day, said that the glory of God is man fully alive. Jesus in John 10:10 said, "I have come to give life and to give it to the full." I want to talk to you today about going where you want to go, which leads us to a discussion on significance. Everybody wants significance in life. We want our lives to count. We want to live fully, that we were made to live. There were once three guys discussing what it would mean to arrive in life, and for some reason, it turned to politics. The first guy thought that to be truly significant, to truly arrive in life, is if he would get an invitation to the White House to have coffee with the president. The second guy said, no, it's not if you're just invited to have coffee with the president. It's if the phone rings while you're having coffee with the president, and he just simply ignores the call. Then you have truly arrived. The third guy jumped in and said, you guys don't get it at all. It's if you're having coffee with the president, the phone rings, he picks it up and says, sir, it's for you, and he gives you the phone. Then you have truly arrived. Just making sure I cover all my political bases here. I don't know if that's what it means to arrive for you to get to the office of the most powerful man here in North America, or maybe even considered around the world. But in any case, everybody wants to arrive somewhere. We've got something internally driving us to get to where we want to go. True significance. What is that? What does it really mean to get to where we want to go? Well, as you'll discover in life's journey, the journey is just as important as the destination. Some people have destination disease. And when they get to this decided destination, the wind kind of comes out of their sails. But the reality is our journey is just as important as our destination. Going where we want to go includes today, tomorrow, and the rest of our lives. The journey is just as important as your destination. By the way, the keywords go in the blanks. You've got a set of notes in your folder if you are interested in filling that in. In fact, the journey also determines your destination. What type of journey you take will determine who you are, which will ultimately determine your destination. Going where you want to go will depend, first of all, on your vision for life, your future. What is your vision? Tom James once said that most people spend more time planning their grocery shopping than designing their future. Don't raise your hands, but how many of you would say that's true about my life? The amount of time I put into my grocery shopping or whatever other shopping lists that I put together, more time is spent into that than thinking about my life vision. We take more time figuring out what we want to put in our stomachs than we do about something much more important, the vision for our lives, figuring out where we want to go. But before we talk about vision, we must first talk about changing or growing. I hear this word challenge a lot whenever I speak, when I ever hear other people speak, and I've said it many times, I'm going to challenge you, and I think we ought to be challenged. There's just one problem with being challenged, and that is that a lot of times we feel this buzz, and I've been in church world a lot, and so you walk through those plate glass doors on your way out to your car, you say to your sweetheart, your spouse, you say, hey, man, that was challenging. And you have this little God buzz going on and going, wow, that was amazing. And that buzz is about all you get because you don't take the next step and say, what's going to change as a result of what I just heard? So I'm actually going to take a moment of silence right now. And I want you at your tables, I want you to take about 30 seconds to a minute, and I want you to write down one thing that's going to change as a result of what you encountered here this weekend. Something that Jeremy shared, something that you heard from Brian or Scott or Bill or John. We had a number of ideas and thoughts that came out this weekend. I want you to take a moment right now and write down what's going to change as I leave, go out through those doors today, either back with my family, back in my community, back with my business. What's going to change as a result of what I've just heard? Go ahead, take a minute. If all that has happened this weekend is you've come and you've been challenged, you've wasted your time. Isn't that true? We need to be changed. And so the paradigm we want to talk about, we've been talking about a paradigm shift, is going from challenge to change. What changes me? And I would like to just suggest that every time we're in an environment where we are learning and growing and meeting mentors, we need to be taking notes of action. What are points of action that we're actually going to take as a result? So changing or growing. And then the second paradigm that I want to talk about is serving, having an entirely serving mindset in everything that we do. This needs to precede any discussion of vision. Otherwise, our vision can become very self-centered. We need to adapt a changing mindset and a serving mindset before we can discuss where we want to go. Because just rearranging the furniture in your office or changing your schedule is not going to cut it, folks. Sportscaster Harry Callis once introduced Philadelphia Phillies outfielder Gary Maddox by saying, "Gary used to be depressed and miserable. Now he's miserable and depressed." So we have to do more than just rearrange some things in our lives. So let's talk about being changed versus simply being challenged. All around us, we see change and growth. We experience the effects of it in our culture, our families, our businesses, our communities, and all of life. In fact, change is inevitable, but your growth is optional. What you choose to do with all the change around you, whether you change or not, that is an option. We call that growth, and it's a powerful statement, so let me say it again. Change is inevitable, but your growth is optional. I shared that quote with you from Viktor Frankl. I want to put it up on the screen this time. Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl once said that between a stimulus and a response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response, and in our response lies our growth and our freedom. You and I can go through life reacting, or we can go through life responding, right? And every time there is a business downturn, every time that there are challenges financially around us, and if we're in business, we all have those, we have the power to choose our response. And in that lies our growth and our freedom. Thank you, Mr. Frankl. Today, you can make that choice. How many of you remember Apollo 11, by the way? Anybody here remember Apollo 11? Because that's a pretty long time ago. Your parents, a lot of you in here, would tell you how they were transfixed by this event. What was that statement by Neil Armstrong? One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Now, let me ask you, in the Apollo 11 mission, at what point on that journey did it take the most energy? Was it the quarter million of a miles to the moon? Was it orbiting the moon once the Apollo 11 mission had arrived? Actually, none of these. In fact, when the lunar module separated from the command module to go down and survey the moon, one of the astronauts commented that the energy it took was less than the breath of a baby. You see, more energy was spent in the first few minutes of liftoff from Earth than was used in a half a million miles for several days. This provides us with a powerful metaphor. It always takes the most energy in the beginning to break out of that gravity zone of deeply embedded negative habits, mediocrity, status quo achievements, and present-day tendencies that you and I hold on to. And these result in little or no growth today. Today is the first day of the rest of our lives. Today is the day that we make choices, and we change, and we choose to break out of those negative habits. And it takes the most energy today. Once you take the plunge, however, according to the metaphor, you expend all that energy to launch yourself out into a universe beyond your tiny world. You will experience that positive change, that growth, that fulfillment, and ultimately that joy that God designed us for. And this requires risk. You as business folks understand risk. And so I just want to share one of my favorite quotes again. I'm a bit of a risk taker myself. I've always loved to live a little bit on the edge. When I was 16, it meant jumping off of cliffs in the water. And for years, my friends and I were doing the 30, 40-foot stuff, and Mom and Dad were okay with that. But once we got up to twice that height, it was no more camping, no more hanging out with those guys, okay? And so it was funny. I moved to Asia. We were at a large pool where they held the Southeast Asia Games, and they had like a 25, 30-foot platform. And I could hardly force myself to go off of it. Something happens in the cranium over time. You know, we go against risk, and we kind of mitigate whatever we can do to try to minimize our risk. And so I have to remind myself that some risks are good. And sometimes we don't have absolute certainty, but we do have clarity on a few things that we know. And the clarity is it's better to take the risk than to not take the risk. Anybody know what I'm talking about? There are times we have to step out because the risk is greater if we don't. So this comes from Aeneas Nin, and she said, "The day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom." We're always grateful for butterflies that break forth from the larva. We're always grateful for those cherry blossoms that will hopefully break out here in a few weeks, okay, if you're from the south, maybe, anyhow, maybe a month or two here. But we love to see those break out. And the day comes when there's a greater risk to stay tight in the bud and to die. And it's time to take that painful leap to risk and break forth and blossom. So do whatever it takes today to break free of the neutral zone. If you are in a position right now, ready to make a big decision, remember that risk. Find clarity on what you do know. Get some good advice, but break free today. Take that risk. Some of you maybe needed to hear that word today. So here's some questions that I want to ask you in this session at this point. In terms of your growth, in terms of change, what is one thing you're going to start doing as a result of this conference beyond today that will engage risking at another level for you? You know, it's easy for us to make changes where there is no risk. But what are those things that you're going to do to push yourself? The older we get, the less risk we take, the less we push ourselves. For some of you, that might mean actually taking the step and asking somebody smarter than you to begin mentoring you. I've had so much benefits in my life by asking somebody to mentor me. But that might be a risk for you in terms of relationship. It's not a great one. For some of you, that might mean signing up for that cohort that was made available to you yesterday. It might seem like a financial risk, but actually there's a greater risk in you not signing up for that. And so we need to understand, folks, that there are times that we are called to leap out. I think of my new friend Rick here, who took a risk when he retired early, had no intentions. And God did not reveal to you, Rick, until after you retired, the next step, which is this new business school at Rosedale. I love your story. That just really impressed me this weekend, that the risk you took has now opened up a new vista for you. And very excited about what God is going to do through you in the new Rosedale Business School. Who will keep you accountable? Who are you going to actively seek out to keep you accountable to that new challenge that you are going to step out? Have you written anything down? Science actually tells us that when we write stuff down, we're more apt to do it, okay? And so I always encourage my audiences, write stuff down. Don't just think it, ink it, all right? There's something that happens that goes from the thought down into our psyche and our activity. There must be some kind of dopamine that's released in the activity sphere, I guess, of our bodies. When we write things down, and then the next step is to share what we wrote down with somebody else. The stickiness factor always goes up. Don't just think it, ink it. The last few years, our family chose some specific words to write down to describe areas we wanted to grow in. And we've been doing this exercise for a number of years. We choose one word, we choose a verse from Scripture to go with that, and then we put it in a prominent place in our home, a word that we want to work on, develop in, and this year we even had the girlfriend and the spouse of my daughter, and there's a whole bunch of us on that prominent place in our home right now. But it's a daily reminder that this is what we want to work on, or this is what we're processing, and this is what our goal is for this year. Begin with the end in mind. Once we've made that choice to change, to begin living a life of significance, where do we begin? with the end. Write your obituary, I told you just the other day. It was a great place to start. Write your obituary. Begin with the end in mind. Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes found himself in quite a predicament one day, according to a story I once heard. Apparently, he had misplaced his train ticket while traveling from one place to another. And he was searching for it, reaching into one pocket, into another, couldn't find his ticket. The conductor was standing nearby, and Mr. Holmes was obviously very irritated. Finally, the train official looked at Mr. Holmes and said, "We know who you are, sir, and we trust you. You don't have to worry about it. When you get to your destination, you can just mail your ticket in, and it's all good." And Mr. Holmes replied, he said, "I'm not concerned about you getting my ticket. I just want to know where I'm going." He had forgotten his destination. And that's where we need to start. Our picture of the future determines both the quality and the direction of our life's journey. The picture of our future determines both the quality and the direction of our life's journey. And that brings us to the second framework for vision. We need to evaluate our current journey, where we've come from, what we've experienced in the past, and determine, will the world be a better place from now on out because I was here? When God's CIA agents show up someday and they dust the world for fingerprints, will they find your fingerprints, or will they find the fingerprints of God all over the place? The evidence of a life well lived is not my fingerprints, but what God has done through me. And we need to evaluate, will the world become a better place because God worked through me? What he builds will last. Except the Lord builds a house, we labor in vain who build it. This has everything to do with whether we live, to serve or to be served. An inward-focused, self-centered worldview is so small. We were designed to serve, to be curved outward, as I shared yesterday. Life is about serving. Now, Mark Sennett, in his book, The Book of Blunders, writes the following. It happened to be a wet day in sunny Southern California, and the street in front of the Keystone was about a half inch deep in mud and water. Chester Conklin spied Mabel. I had no idea you were going to tell us about Mabel this morning, Jeremy. But supposedly, Chester Conklin spied Mabel Norman across the street, standing on a curb, wondering how to get across this muddy street. And so he made a fancy gesture. He became a server in that moment. He bowed like a head waiter, expecting a $50 tip, snatched off his coat, spread it in the mud for Mabel to step on. She stepped and disappeared into an open manhole. Serving's not always easy. I don't know if Mabel ever, if she's still swimming around down there or not, but you know, sometimes we go, I tried that. It just didn't work. It fell flat on its face. That was a pretty bad blunder and certainly was not intended. And it is true. When you and I take a serving mindset, I remember my father in business, people took advantage of him because he was a Christian businessman. They knew he wouldn't sue them. He knew they wouldn't come chasing him down. My dad took some hits for it. But my dad was always very successful in business. And the ones that he took hits over, it didn't matter. God had his back. And I know that serving is not always easy. And I'm not suggesting that we just let people run all over us. That's not my point. But you will get run over at times. It happens when you serve. You'll be misunderstood at times. We all know what it means to be misunderstood. You might even invest with little to show for it at times. That's what happens when you have a serving mindset. And the reality is, at the end of the day, when we lay our head on the pillow, we have to answer the question, did I honor, did I serve my audience of one ultimately? Did I do what was right? Did I serve someone? You know, because ultimately our audience of one is all that really matters. Did I serve? Did I invest? I once read about a business-to-business, a B2B insurance agency that spent $2 million. This is a practical example, by the way, of serving. And some of you are going to disagree with me, and that's okay, but I have made this almost my mantra everywhere I go and speak to businesses. Hire more people to answer your phones, okay? I think a lot of people are losing business today because of their phone systems. How many of you get frustrated calling in and you get answering services and you get linked to this, to that, to this, and you never get a hold of a real person? When we were in Kentucky, we And I will finish my story about this B2B insurance agency in a sec. But when we lived in Kentucky, every time I called my bank, and they had numerous branches, they were a good-sized bank, I would always get a person every time I called in. And if they couldn't help me, they would get me to somebody that could help me. And when we moved to Chicago, we got into this bank that, I'm telling you, can hardly get a hold of somebody. It was worse even trying to get into my mom's bank up in the Bank of Nova Scotia up in Ontario. It was like breaking into their vault. And then you eventually get to their like voicemail, right? They eventually put you off to the voicemail. And then what's up with the voicemail? It's full. That's right. So just a practical thing that you might want to take away here today. Some of you are saying, Luke, I can't do this. But this is what one B2B insurance agency did. They spent $2 million ripping out that fancy voicemail system. And every call that now comes in gets answered by a human every time. Every time a human being answers. They believe in serving. They believe in businesses with people. And it actually paid for itself. Listen to this. It paid for itself in 4 months. And so if you want a practical way to serve people, you may want to consider, I don't know how many of you have automatic phone systems, and you're saying, Luke, that sure wouldn't work with us. But that is one practical way I believe that we can serve our customers better today. It is getting harder and harder to do business with people. We are protecting ourselves with layers and layers and layers. And I get it. There are all the good reasons out there why we need to have those systems. But that is one practical way we can serve people around us. Seth Godin called it a strategic investment for that company. Not a cost-cutting shortcut. It was a strategic investment. Bottom line, it's an act of serving the customer that also affects the bottom line. Winston Churchill once said, we make a living by what we get. We make a life by what we give. Let me say that again. Winston Churchill once said, we make a living by what we get. We make a life by what we give. A serving mindset. How can we serve people? And in family especially, sometimes the greatest way for us to give and to serve is to serve that little guy that's been waiting for us all day when we come home from work. All you take along someday is what you have given away. All you take along someday is what you have given away. You may come home from work all worn out. You may have been serving your customers all day long, and now your family needs you to serve as well. And it's hard. I know what I'm talking about. I think I told you the other day that our staff said, wow, you know, your leadership has changed, you serve us, but it took my family 15 years to figure that out. No, it didn't. It took me at least 15 years, and it's still taking me time to figure out what it means to give quality time, quantity time, to truly serve those that I claim that I love the most. So life of significance is all about changing and serving. And with these two frameworks, we can now break down vision that will help us to go where we want to go. We've talked about beginning with the end in mind, your picture of the future. Let me just reemphasize this by taking us back to one of our classical children's stories, Alice in Wonderland. She comes with a fork in the road, right? And that nasty Cheshire cat just, you know, magically appears every time Alice has a predicament. And at the fork in the road, Alice is not sure which way to go. And so the cat responds, "Where are you going?" To which Alice says, "I don't know." And the cat very succinctly replies, "Then it doesn't matter which way you go. Because if you aim for nothing, I guarantee it, you will hit it every time. You will hit it every time." And I've told my kids this a lot. I've told Amy this a lot. I've told myself this a lot. If you don't have a plan for your life, everybody else will. If you don't make a schedule for your life, everybody else will, right? The guys call up, the gals call up, say, "Hey, you got anything going Thursday night?" "Well, yeah, well, that's our family night, but you don't have it in the schedule." "No, I've got nothing going," right? And it's amazing how we will sacrifice because everyone else has a wonderful plan for our lives. We all need a picture of the future. We need to begin with the end in mind. Where do I want to be at the end of my life? Another way of saying it is, what do I want my kids and my grandkids to be saying about me around my bed as I slip into a coma? What will they remember? What kind of a legacy will I leave? What will they say about me at my funeral? Back to the obituary. Secondly, let's discuss your values. And I want to spend a little bit of time on this, and I just looked at the time and didn't realize it had rapidly faded. So I want to spend a little bit of time on values. Maybe this is your biggest takeaway from today. But these are the non-negotiable priorities in life that define your character and guide your decisions and behavior. Now, most of us like to see results, instant results. We like to slap a Band-Aid for a quick fix. But there are no quick fixes to life, and especially in the values department. Opera singer Beverly Sills once said, "There are no shortcuts to any place worth going. There are no shortcuts to any place worth going." In China, there's a certain species of bamboo that in the first 4 years after it's been planted, it remains a tiny shoot. Now, when you bought it from the local nursery, they told you, boy, this thing is going to shoot to over 80 to 100 feet high. And so you were excited. You brought the thing home, but for 4 years, it remains a shoot. You water it, you cultivate it, you weed it, you nurture it, maybe even preach to it and say, hey, grow. I believe in you. Grow. And it remains seemingly unchanged. But in the fifth year, it suddenly shoots up in 1 year to over 80 to 100 feet. Folks, what was happening in those first 4 years? It was putting its roots down deep to sustain its public growth. Once those roots had been developed, the growth now could go above ground and the results were highly visible. You and I, too, need to expend great amounts of energy developing the hidden character of our hearts. Jesus spent 30 years in a solitary life, a carpenter. We don't know all that included. He was a stonemason, some people say. There is a shout out to you concrete guys again. They didn't have a lot of wood in that part of the world and most likely did a lot of stonework. But we have to spend a lot of energy developing the hidden character of our hearts and personal integrity like Jesus did before we will see visible results in our public life. The iceberg is a great metaphor, illustration of that. We all want public success, but it's only built on our private success. Our values are internal, and they help guide our behaviors and help us make our decisions where we want to go in life. When Walt Disney, for example, started his theme parks, he knew how to excite people. He had a very clear purpose. We are in the happiness business, he said. We make magic. His picture of the future was to keep the same smile on people's faces when they leave the park as when they entered the park. He didn't care whether a guest was in the park 2 hours or 10 hours. Just keep them smiling, all right? And for those of you that are Rosedale students here today, that's my daughter many years ago when we went to Disney, and I'm telling you, the smile was on her face the entire time. How did they accomplish that? Well, by focusing on their values. And Walt was brilliant when it came to values. He not only came up with a set of values, and by the way, Blanchard and others would suggest that you should have no more than 5 values. The more you have, the less you can focus on them. Disney had 4. Walt had 4, and they were values that guided the direction, the behavior of their company. He also recognized the importance of having those rank ordered. So here's Disney's values, the show, efficiency, safety, and courtesy. What do you think would have been the one that he would have ranked at the top? Okay, like the show itself, the Disney park was an amazing show. Getting people efficiently through those turnstiles, that was one thing my daughter and I experienced. They were amazing at getting thousands of people through the gates at the beginning of the day. Safety, right? We want to have a safe experience if we're going to have a lot of fun. We also want to be safe. And then courtesy, you know, people are giving you high fives and welcoming you into the park. Disney really lives up to their 4 values. But how would you rank order those? Which one would you put at the top? The show? Safety? Courtesy? Courtesy? How many would go with courtesy? All right. How many of you would go with the show? Okay, a few of you. How about safety? All right. And what's the other one? Efficiency. How many would go with efficiency for number 1? Nobody. All right. Very good. Well, here's how he rank ordered them. Very good. Scott, you're the smartest guy in the room. Brain injury, and he brings it. This is awesome. So safety is the number 1. Because if you are welcoming people into the park and you are being very courteous and friendly and you're being very efficient, getting them in very quickly to this amazing show, and you hear this scream, right? And you go, oh, they're always screaming and yelling in the park, right? You just don't really care. No, you're the closest one to the scream. You'd better take care of that, right? Because if you're not experiencing safety in our parks, that smile is not going to be on your face, right? Which is our picture of the future, says Walt. We want to see the same smile on their faces when they come in as when they leave. And so safety is number one for Disney. And they have made that their number one priority. We have to rank order our values. And of course, you guessed it, efficiency was definitely last. And they even rank courtesy above the show. So how about our personal values? And personal values determine who we really are, the types of decisions that we will make. They also qualify us as someone worth following or not following. Our values. And there's this classic story in the Bible that we're going to look at. A very unexpected person who had to clarify his values before accomplishing his life mission. Few people realize that Jesus, like us, had to clarify his values before he went out and led his enterprise. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8 is one of those verses that always kind of jars my mind. Son though he was, Jesus had to learn obedience by what he suffered. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8. He had to learn obedience by what he suffered. Fast forward to the time when he showed up on the beach one day and called out to a group of fishermen. What would compel them to instantly drop everything, their financial security, their business, their safety, everything, to follow him? To leave everything behind, including their families, to follow Jesus. It was because Jesus had clarified his values. He had become somebody worth following. He had a picture of the future, a compelling vision. He was somebody worth following, defined by his values. And I believe that Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8 is actually kind of throwing us back to Matthew chapter 4 or Luke chapter 4, which records the three temptations. Y'all remember the first temptation, turning stones into bread. Have you ever been so hungry that when you come home from work, you're walking up the driveway, kicking those little stones, going, man, I wish I could turn them into M&Ms. Back to the M&M thing here. Brian, anybody ever been that hungry? Yeah, I haven't either. And so I, you know, when I read these temptations, quite frankly, I've never been that hungry. I've never been tempted to turn stones into bread. And the reality is, in this temptation, Jesus is choosing eternal rewards by refusing immediate gratification. That's the real temptation that every one of us as leaders faces on a daily basis. Denying what I want right now in the moment. And Jesus says, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. I live by a higher calling, a higher vision. I don't live to instantly gratify my flesh. I don't live to use my business to get for me what I want in this moment. And that, my friends, is a value that every one of us has to adapt at some point in our lives. Am I in it for me, or am I in it for something greater than me? Otherwise, we will use our opportunities, business, to take advantage of others. We will not choose eternal rewards over instant gratification. Jesus became a leader worth following because he denied instant gratification. The second temptation. Have you ever been tempted to go to the top of the local church steeple, or if you're in an agricultural area, your local silos, and put on your Superman suit and just leap off? Has that been a temptation for anybody here? If so, Brian, we could probably find some counselors for them, couldn't we? And that, my friends, is how I always read that temptation, and I said I can't relate to that, of course. So what really is the true nature of that temptation? I believe what is going on here, folks, is that Jesus is at the top of the temple looking down, and there's all the religious gurus, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, all the PhDs, everybody there that's expecting a Messiah. And what a greater place than for him to announce himself and say, I am Messiah. I have come. To announce himself as a super leader, what better context than to do it right there? And Satan knew it. This was a real temptation. And it's a temptation for us today, and that is to use our God-given gifts, abilities, and talents, because we've all got them. We've got abilities, but we use them for our glory instead of to build the kingdom, to make God's glory famous. Thank you, Scott, for what you shared this morning. Everything is about bringing God the ultimate glory. That's what Scott said was his mission. That's what all of our mission should be in life, whether it's personal, whether it's business, to build the kingdom of God and to bring him glory. When we deny instant gratification and when we use our God-given gifts and abilities for his glory to build his kingdom, you and I become leaders worth following. Lives of purpose that are not inward focused, but are for something much higher. Blanchard and Hodges use the word ego. And usually when we hear ego, we think of Freud and we also think negative. But they use it as a way to reframe the negative ego. The way they use it as an acronym is when we edge God out of the equation through our pride, through our fear, when we make it about ourselves, we don't deny instant gratification, we make a name for ourselves, we edge God out. But they said if we reframe that, we can use our abilities and talents, we can use our purpose, our mission, our business to exalt God only. Ego, reframe it. Paradigm shift. There you go, Rick. Exalt God only is what we ought to be doing with our egos. Third temptation was a shortcut to success. And I'll try to keep this moving, folks. I apologize. I'm a little bit behind time. Brian, can I take an extra 5 minutes? Okay. We're all tempted to take shortcuts to success. That's the bottom line of the third temptation, right? Satan says, I've got the contract. Just sign the dotted line. 3 seconds on your knees, Jesus, and I'll give you the kingdoms of this world. And again, I can't relate to that temptation. I've never been offered, you know, Mexico and Canada we'll throw the U.S. in as well. I've never been offered that. That's never been a temptation for me. But for Jesus, it was a real temptation because don't take the long, hard road of the cross. Don't do it your Father's way. Take a shortcut. Just 3 seconds on your knees, compromise everything, sell your soul to get what you want. The end justifies the means, we hear. And in business sometimes, maybe we're tempted to, since we're around tax time, to cheat on our taxes so we can give more to charity or to give more to the Rosedale Business School. Sorry, folks, that just does not cut it. Is that right, Jeremy? Okay. All right. This is the man who leads Rosedale Bible College. The end justifies the means, we say. But do the ends really justify the means? We are not to take shortcuts to success. In Seth Godin's words, is it worth lowering your standards and giving up your principles in order to find a better outcome? Godin states this. He says, many times the means are the ends. How we choose to act changes who we choose to become. And the way we choose to get to where we're going defines what it's going to be like when we get there. And I think I pointed out the Bernie Ebers and Kenneth Lay from Enron and WorldCom, so I'm not going to talk about that now. But that's what happens when you and I don't become leaders worth following, when our Christianity does not change us from the inside out. Goals help us to get to where we want to go. That's the next step here. The reason that people fly around going somewhere, anywhere, possibly nowhere, is they've never set any life goals. John Maxwell says, on the success journey, the goals that you set become your roadmap, and they may help you make progress. You need some kind of map, he says. Not because you're hoping or expecting to reach some final destination, but because it shows you the journey. Brian Tracy, the goals guru, says the primary cause of success in life is the ability to set and achieve goals. And that's why the people who do not have them are doomed forever to work for those who do. You either work to achieve your own goals or you work to achieve someone else's goals. Now, the tool that I introduced to you the other day, if you didn't get it and you want to write down that short code, I've put together a purpose statement. I talk through this more in the videos. This is a free online resource if you want to work on your personal mission statement. Help form your values. I've put together this short online video course to help you do that. Let me wrap this up and start by sharing some of the saddest words that you'll ever hear. And that is, at the end of your life, you look back and say, what might have been? Speaker Vicki Hitzkes puts it in a unique and different way when she asks, will you look back on life and say, I wish I had, or I'm so glad I did? Tony Campolo, in his book, Who Switched the Price Tags, relates the words of a Black Baptist preacher speaking to a group of college students in his congregation. Children, he said, you're going to die one of these days. They're going to take you out to the cemetery, drop you in a hole, throw some dirt on your face, and go back to the church and eat potato salad. When you were born, he continued, you alone were crying and everybody else was laughing. The important question I want to ask is this. When you die, are you going to be happy leaving everybody else crying? And the answer depends on whether you live to gain titles, or testimonies? Trophies, titles, or testimonies? When they lay you and I in the grave someday, are people going to be standing up reciting the fancy titles you earned? Or are they going to stand around giving testimonies of the good things that you did for them? Will you leave behind someday a newspaper column telling people how important you were? Or will you leave crying people who give testimonies of how they've lost the best friend they ever had? Bob Buford once said, "Who will attend your funeral without looking at his watch?" That will ultimately be determined by your vision in life, the values, the goals, whether or not you lived to serve or to be served. Testimonies, choose testimonies over trophies and titles. Choose values that make you a person worth following. Determine your picture of the future and prepare to leave a legacy for next generations. The flight path, the vision you choose for your life will determine your future and your legacy. You don't want to fly around somewhere, anywhere, possibly going nowhere. You want to lead, love, and serve to change your world. So change, grow, serve, align yourself with the values of Jesus. Maintain the picture of the future that he gives you for your business, for your life. Set the goals to get to where you want to go. Would you bow your heads as we pray? Father, this morning I thank you that you have called all of us out of darkness into your marvelous light to change the world, to leave this place a better place than when we found it. Through business, through the marketplace, God, you have called us, you have anointed us to go out, to go where you want us to go. So I ask here in closing, Lord, that you who began a good work in us would perform it and complete it in the day of Christ Jesus. And all of God's people said, amen.